warm welcome, everyone. This is Straight from the Heart, and I'm Juliana, coming to you straight from my heart with love, compassion, and peace. Guest for tonight's show is an independent UFO investigator and researcher, as well as the director of the HBCC UFO Research Group out of British Columbia, Canada, Mr. Brian Vike. Brian started HBCC UFO Research back in mid-2000, as he has always had a fascination with the UFO topic. Brian works out of a small town called Houston in the northwestern part of British Columbia, Canada. He receives hundreds upon hundreds of UFO sighting reports every year, which he does his best to investigate and come up with answers for. Some of Brian's past credentials consist of being a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and also a member of the American Association of Variable Star Observers. He also used to volunteer at the planetarium in Vancouver. Brian has been featured in UFO documentaries on countless radio shows and in the newspapers. Brian says he would have never imagined the UFO topic could ever keep him as busy as it does, but he does enjoy the subject very much. Brian is married with two great kids who are grown and out of their own, on their own, plus the light of his life, his six-year-old granddaughter. Brian has his own internet radio show called The Vike Report and has a regular show which airs on The Jeff Rentz Show, where he discusses his many UFO investigations and shares many of his recorded interviews with the many people who have had sightings and experiences with UFOs and ETs. Listeners, please join me in a warm welcome for Mr. Brian Vike. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Juliana, and thank you so much for having me on this evening.
You're very welcome, Brian. I know you got a lot of things to share with us tonight regarding all the investigations that you do, so if it's okay with you, I'm just going to turn the show right over to you because I know you're ready, and we can just go ahead and get started, and you just go ahead and tell us all this interesting information that you got, my dear.
All righty. Pardon me. I guess for a lot of your listeners, and they may not know me or they may not have, listened or heard or read some of the reports that, you know, I've got since I started, like you said, in mid-2000, and it was really slow, but all it was just something to do, fill a little bit of time in, and like you said, I never knew it was going to get this large, but anyway, it was ended up working on in 2001, the fall. That's when things started rolling along, and it got to, I worked on a crop circle investigation, and the really cool thing about that was there was not a soul in this field. I mean, CBC Radio, CBC Radio contacted the lady there, contacted her sister at CKFT Television on Terrace, and they contacted me and asked, did I know anything about these crop circles? And I said, I hadn't a clue. I haven't heard anything. So anyways, I figured, well, I said, give me a little while and see if I can get anything up. Well, 45 minutes later, bango, here we go. I had some information. Actually, I talked to the guy who flew over top of him. So I got all my gear packed up and took off, and it was just a wonderful experience, you know. And to this date, I must be honest, I have no idea what made these circles. I've got no idea. Following that came a case out of the Falkland, B.C., and that dealt with cattle mutilation. And to this date, that remains, you know, unsolved. I mean, the RCMP officer, you know, he faxed me eventually a 40-page report, and, you know, and I helped him out as best I could. And he ended up wanting to close the case due to the farmers and ranchers in the area getting kind of worried because, you know, they get to hear all these stories of UFO encounters and possible connection to these cow mutilations. So anyways, he wrapped that up and closed that. Brian, I don't know what's going on. You know, he said samples off, never heard from Saskatchewan University. So he just said, I got to close it. So that was pretty much it for that year. 2002, it was the weirdest thing that happened. In 2002, it's just like somebody turned a light switch on and the floodgates opened. February the 1st, actually, January the 31st, there was a sighting in Burns Lake, and it was kind of an interesting sighting with an unusual craft. It was a triangular object that was seen over Francois Lake, and it was very low. We checked into that, and we couldn't figure out, you know, what the heck that was. It wasn't a Buffalo aircraft, you know, the Coast Guard and stuff, or search and rescue, rather. They fly around. They came in, I think, the following week, so we don't know what that was. And then February the 1st, it was a Friday night of 2002, things went nuts.
Wow.
There were, let's see, three women from Houston, British Columbia. Now, I know these women very well. They live in my hometown. They're very credible. They're married. You know, they attend church. I mean, these are just straightforward women who've got nothing to gain about telling some off, weird story. So, anyways, they went from Houston into Smithers, which is a 45-minute drive, for the day shopping. And, they, of course, they had dinner out and whatnot. And they started their way home roughly around, 9-ish or so. And they got to a little area on the way back from Smithers to Houston. It's called Telqua. Just a couple kilometers east of that, there's a little place called Woodmere. So it's not really a community. It's got nurseries and so forth and some farms and ranches. And as they're driving down Highway 16 heading home, somebody says, oh, look, there's the moon. And it was an overcast night. So, but they could see this bright shining thing through the clouds, you know, or something was on top of the clouds. They couldn't see, you know, anything yet. And they figured it was the moon. Well, if it was the moon, this stinker came down, brought through the cloud cover, down on a pretty good angle. And we're not talking like, you know, really fast here or anything really slow, you know, somewhere in between. And this stinker dropped down on a good angle, and here, at this point, they got a good stretch down the valley. They can see the whole valley. So this thing's coming down, and then it leveled out, and they figured it was treetop. So it had to have been probably a little bit higher than that, but roughly, maybe let's just put it at a couple telephone poles in height. This is where this thing was sitting when it leveled off and was coming directly towards the women. Now, I guess someone, as it got closer, there was a truck behind the women, and I guess he must have saw it, or he, she, whoever, saw this thing and just booted it by the women. They said they'd never seen anybody go so fast. They had slowed down a bit because they were getting pretty fascinated by what they were seeing coming towards them. They had slowed down, and all of a sudden this thing just about on top of them where Tracy, she ends up, she's in the back seat, and then they have the bucket seats, and they've got a console in the middle. And she ended up turning around to sort of the back and laid her back down on the console to look up through the windscreen, the front windscreen, to see this thing as it went over. This thing was massive in size, boomerang-shaped, had these great big large panels of light. You know, there's five on the bottom, and there was one orange light on each tip of this object. It moved silently, just cruised along, not in a great deal of speed, and over top of the women. And meanwhile, of course, you know, you can imagine, hey, they're getting pretty nervous and pretty scared and freaking out. So they ended up booting the car, and they just took off, you know, towards home. I know two of the girls actually looked behind, one on the passenger side in the front and one in the back, Tracy, because she was watching it go. And it just sailed off into the night. Now, the interesting part about that, the women end up coming home, of course, and got all excited and told all their, you know, family and whatnot when they got home. And it was funny because a friend of mine came in and dropped an envelope down on the table the next day, and he had a little diagram of this object. And I thought, I'll be honest with you, I thought he was pulling my leg. I thought Chris was pulling my leg. And anyway, he wasn't. After that event, one of the ladies there, you know, these are not young kids. One of them ended up, she's got, two young girls, very young daughters, and little ones. And, you know, she wouldn't even go to work. She stayed home for possibly a week and a half, I think it was, She had to have either friends or family or somebody come over and stay with her. That's how upset she was over the whole thing. The other two weren't too bad at all. They carried on with their jobs and so forth. But it was a weird night. And then so I got on this case, of course, and, you know, looking into it and researching it the best I could, the best I could get good, contacted, CFB Comox, some of the newspapers, media, which I'm in good standing with anyway. CFB Comox military base on Vancouver Island. Oh, nothing was flying. We don't have nothing up. But that's a normal thing. You just go through the motions, but you know what the answer is going to be. So
right.
The weird thing is, I got on this stinker anyways, and I ended up finding there was a couple in town. Previous night, they saw the same thing. So the same craft was in the area at the same time, but this is in Houston. There's an industrial site, and it's across the tracks across Highway 16, and that's more to the north. And anyways, they were sleeping. Husband and wife own a business. So these are business people, have no interest in UFOs whatsoever, and they have their sort of home above their business. And all of a sudden, I guess the woman, the wife, she woke up, heard sort of humming noise, and she couldn't figure out what it was. Kind of weird, just out of the name, thought maybe there's some problems around their business. So she got up, and she went to one window, couldn't see nothing. Went to another window, couldn't see nothing. Then she went to the sort of the back that looks towards the north and over the Balkley River. And here was this humongous boomerang-shaped craft, which the three women and this woman here figures it, a rough guess, estimate, 400 feet wide, just this thing sitting right above the Balkley River, has a beam down towards the river, just sitting there stationary, and just a silent sort of a little bit of hum to it. And eventually they watched it move off, and that was it. So there was other people out in Smithers that I did track down who actually saw it. One went to the movie, I think it was the movie gallery or whatever it was called, a video store at the time. He went back to the store before he contacted me to get the time and the date he rented his movie, because when he rented his movie on the same night the women seen this object, he had pulled out after grabbing his movie and started down the street, and he's seen something with the light reflecting off this craft, you know, from the town of Smithers. And he pulled over the vehicle and stopped and watched this thing sort of slowly sort of, you know, making this wide circle, and then eventually took off. It just bizarre stuff. And that's what pretty much started it up here. For me, I mean, some of the cases have been absolutely wild. Here's a lady, lives in South Carolina. Now, she has a business, and she moves show horses around and so forth. So she does a lot of traveling on the highways. And she happened to be going to Alaska, and she picked up her horses. She came down, the route here through Mesiad and Junction and so forth, and down Highway 16 through my area. Well, she got to an area just west of town, about 10 miles roughly, and it's a big long hill. You come up towards us here. It's called Hungry Hill. Just before she got to the bottom, it was kind of a straight stretch and flat, and just before she started to climb, there was just a little bit of mist on the road. She ends up moving through the mist, and she's driving along, no problems at all. She's got a dog and a cat as a traveling companion. Of course, she's pulling this big horse trailer behind her. All of a sudden, the dog starts going nutty, hackles sort of come up, the cat's going squirrely in the vehicle, in the truck, running on top of her lap, under the seat, and so forth. A big light comes on, shines down over the truck, completely just about blinds her. She tries to look up, of course she can, all she can see is this blinding light, but she did see some green to this object. Of course, she took her, you know, got her eyes back on the road and started slowing down. And she said, I don't know how I could turn this, this great big trailer in her truck on the round in the middle of the highway. She was so scared. So she started to slow down, pull over, and stop. Meanwhile, this object had taken off straight ahead of her. She could watch it sort of go up the hill. It stopped, sort of turned a little bit, and shot off to the north, and that was it. So, of course, she made her way through town, Houston. There was nothing at the time. We didn't have the 7-Eleven here at the time. So she traveled on to Burns Lake, which does have a 7-Eleven. She pulled in, and she was so frightened. I mean, she was just petrified. She walked in, grabbed a telephone, and, pay phone, and put some coins in and called her husband, who was actually in the United States Air Force, and was telling him over the phone what just happened. Well, meanwhile, all of a sudden, I guess she realizes that, you could hear a pin drop in the store. You know, it was really kind of fascinating because all these people are sitting here listening. So I guess after she ended her conversation with her husband, she hung up the phone, and she turned around, and I guess some of the guys in there says, because it was early and people getting ready to, you know, get the trucks, they're all loggers getting ready to head off to the scales, And he said, oh, that's nothing. They're happening around here all the time. You know, it was really bizarre. But she did contact the RSMP. Actually, she pulled over to the side of the road because there was a radar trap set up. And she walked up to the RSMP officer, constable. It was a lady. Handed her card and said, you know, basically the story, what I pretty much told you. And she says, well, I'll check. So she radioed into Prince George Dispatch. They radioed Houston. And Houston radioed back, says, no, nothing was reported that night. She says, but two RCMP officers the night before traveling, it sounded like they had seen the same object hanging around this area. So, you know, the story goes on. And then, of course, there was a lot more to her story where, there looked like there was an abduction definitely an abduction case going on here, because on another trip as she left and she was really not feeling well, she had a lot of problems with her nasal nostrils and so forth. Her husband begged her basically not to go, but she says, I got to get these horses moved. So she's moving from her home in South Carolina down to another area in the States. And she got along, a couple hundred miles or so down the highway, and she just felt really ill. So she pulled in a motel, for the night just to get off the road and lay down, hopefully to feel better the next day. She got all stuffed up in the nose and so forth. So she ended up, grabbing some tissue, and she blew and blew and blew, her nose. And all of a sudden, there's sort of a clot and some blood came out of her nose and got in the tissue. And she couldn't figure out what the heck this little piece of material was in the tissue besides the blood and so forth. And, so she didn't think much of it, I guess, until she threw it away and flushed down the toilet. And then everything seemed to come to an end for her. In other words, she's had ongoing experiences pretty much for a number of years. And seems to, after this here discharge of this object, everything seems to stop for her, except for now it's into her family, into her grandkids and everything else. They're all going through the same, definitely been visitations and definitely abductions with her. I mean, it's just a bizarre one, Same here back in July 29, 2002. Here's a fella there. He phoned me up. He was all excited. He said, Brian, holy moly. He says, I seen this object from flying down the valley, and it was really, really low. He just sits at about 3,000 feet in the north side of Tahlequah, and then the other side is the Tahlequah Range, about 3,500 feet. And anyways, he watched something go over Round Lake. He said it was massive, maybe the size of a small bus, maybe just slightly elongated, very bright. No trail, tail behind this thing, or not, just straight down the valley, moving at a pretty good clip. Anyways, he ended up reporting that to the RCMP, so he told me. So I went out and visited the RCMP, and I already had Gordon's, I can mention the names I mentioned, by the way, I can mention his. I don't mention anybody's names, I can't. His name's Gordon Stewart, and he told me the story, and I visited the RCMP and Smith's detachment. And they went and got the file, and of course they held it away from me, the writing and whatnot, so I couldn't see it, which makes sense for privacy. And he read off basically what Gordon had told me. Well, ended up there was, 13 people who actually watched this object right from Smithers, right through Tahlequah, Crick, and Houston here. So you got four communities. And it takes about a 45-minute run from Houston to Smithers. So you have these communities all in between. So a lot of people ended up seeing this, and there are probably others from what I understand, but I just haven't been able to talk to them, and I don't think they want to talk about it. Watch this object shoot down the valley. Now, was it a fireball? No, because it couldn't have been, because if a fireball, it would have ran into, say, Chicken Mountain, for example, just from the altitude this thing was at. And a few other things, because you just can't twist and turn and maneuver down the valley. I've never seen a meteor or a fireball do that in my life. So you know what the interesting part about this was, Julianne, was all of a sudden we get reports coming in of oak barrel kind of shaped things, with these protrusions coming out, flying up and down the valley. I thought, that's weird. So this is just following, just maybe 2 days following this, this one major sighting. And I'm thinking, well, what the heck is that? And there was more than one. There was about four or five people reported seeing this darn thing. It had a really a low sort of hummy drum sort of sound to it. And, the way they described and did up some diagrams for me, I thought, gosh, I've got to check this, check into this. So I passed it around to some of the ufologist friends of mine, and luckily a lot of them agreed. It looked like it possibly a drone, a military drone. And so that just, it just started from there. It was so bizarre. There was, they moved in like a dirty shirt, the military here. They had trucks going everywhere. They had aircraft, helicopters, you name it, flying all over. So I don't know if they lost something themselves that they, you know, were testing, or they had some kind of craft that went down looking for, or was this something unknown from elsewhere? I don't know. But the interesting part, too, there was also at the same time there was a training exercise supposedly going on down in the down by just outside of Williams Lake, called Anaheim Lake. They have a big test area there, flight area, and it was supposed to be testing. Well, there wasn't. But here's the cool thing: we boarded a plane around the same time. We're going to go down to my dad's 80th birthday. Now, the first day we couldn't get out due to we were just socked in with bad weather. So we came home and went out back to the airport the next day, got on a plane, and they de-iced the wings, and they pulled us out, and we flew out in the jet. It was 737. And then we didn't get up there too much further, and then all of a sudden the pilot comes over the announcement, or the PA, and says, oh, we're going to have to make a slight deviation in our flight plan due to military exercise. And I'm sitting here, what? You know? And I can't get a straight, and you got to remember, I can't get a straight answer out of Comox, eh? I just can't. Right. I'm in the military. They just don't know, nothing's going on. So there were, you know, that was another big experience. You know, it was a big, big case, and it just went on and on and on, and still to this day, unexplained. One of the biggest cases, boy, I'll tell you, one of the biggest cases, I think, well, there's been a bunch of them, that I had that absolutely, I think this one, I think you're going to enjoy this one. Back in July 2003, actually, it started. I started getting reports in from Kamloops, British Columbia, and that's say heading down into the Okanagan here. So it's sort of the central part of the province, roughly, you know. And it's a nice, warm climate there. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. Kamloops, and then some down, you know, some smaller communities, Vernon, Kelowna, you know, straight down to the southeast Kootenays there. So we're looking at a long distance, hundreds and hundreds of miles. Now, I ended up from one lake there. I got Gardam Lake, it's called, in B.C., and this is where it all started from. I think it was July 25th, because I did some checking. I think I said 22nd before on a million shows, but I think it was the 25th. Here's a bunch of people out, you know, enjoying a beautiful, clear day, warm, and, you know, nice lake and everything. There's five in the party. And anyways, I guess they're walking along, and I guess one of the ladies looked up in the sky and seen what she describes as a cylinder, a long cylinder, and it just moved slowly across the sky. And, you know, it was a pretty good altitude, but it was weird. And she gave out this scream, of course, when she seen it, you know, to get everybody's attention to look up. Well, as everybody sort of turned and then seen what she was screaming about and looked up, this thing split in half. So in other words, if you had take a pencil and then you cut it completely in half, that's how this thing did. It separated from the half. So the back half moved up, you know, slowly, but caught up to the front half. They eventually moved along a little bit more in the sky and then just about came to a dead stop, and then one turned to the northwest and then took off that way, and the other one turned to the southeast and went that way. No one had a clue what was going on. And then then it started. Green balls of light falling everywhere. And we're not talking meteors here at all. Not even close. Hovering around the mountains, zigzagging up and down, back and forth. Couldn't find out what was going on. And it just kept going and going and going like that until it came to the July 28th. So, you know, and there's a ton of sightings in between there. July 28th, I ended up getting so many reports, like I ended up speaking to well over 200 witnesses for one sighting of a great big moon-sized ball object, which left what I believe was a trail behind it, or close to it, or at least I think it caused it, because I can't say for sure. But and this trail in the sky went eventually from horizon to horizon. It looked like a neon bulb, one of these neon fixtures, but the fluorescent tube. It was so bright that people just said, and it sat there in the sky for probably an hour. They said it was the most bizarre thing. The observatory were getting reports, RTMP, the media. But this ball, this huge ball, the size of the moon, you know, if you look at it, say, a full moon at night, that's about the size of it, moved around over top of valleys, made 90-degree turns, scared people into their homes, over top of vehicles. It just went on and on until the thing, of course, eventually disappeared. And like I did, I grabbed my fishing rod and got out of the house and went fishing because after, you know, getting about 70, 80, and I didn't know I was getting to talk to about 200 people. You know, I went fishing for a while. But it was the big one. It's probably the biggest, one of the biggest cases I do have. It was on just following that.
Is this still going on now, Brian?
Pardon?
Is this still going on now as we speak?
It's really slowed down here a lot. I mean, reports coming in. There's been some interesting stuff coming in from Chilliwack. I don't know what's going on. I got another report tonight, but it's slowed down. It seemed to be 2 years in a row that were just 2002 and 2003, just completely wild. And I mean, actually, it was the UFO capital out here of Canada, and it wasn't me saying that. It was a lot of other people said it was just so much. Actually, that's what really got me going. You know, as being guests on shows and so forth. You know, as well. But I think the weirdest one, probably, like I said, the biggest one. Now, this is absolutely fascinating, but completely frightening for these two women. Just after that sighting of this on the 28th, where I spoke to these large number of people, two women went north, and only about roughly 5 minutes, say, just outside of north of Kelowna, they ended up pulling over the side of the road, and they got out. No sooner did they get out, and these women, hey, they're not kids, they're very credible. Matter of fact, I've talked to this one now for so long, it's ridiculous. And a matter of fact, I've gone down, and actually they shot a documentary on it. It's such an awesome case. But anyways, what happened is they got out of their vehicle, and the passenger just looked up, and here was these lights. And there were three of them, eventually end up three. There was these lights coming across the sky and coming together. When you got three lights getting close, you're going to get a triangle shape of some sort of lights, you know. And all of a sudden, they came together so close, and then they started to drop down, towards the women's location. But eventually, as they dropped down, they sort of merged, I believe, into one or whatever, and they formed this great big sort of a neon fluorescent green ball that eventually came down. That's good size. Came down in front of the vehicle, just a little bit away, you know, ahead of them on the highway, and hovered over the highway and sat there. Well, these guys are, you know, pretty much flipping out, but curiosity is getting the best of them too. Now, I know Karina, and I'll mention her name. Karina Sables is her name. She ended up grabbing. She has a big spotlight she can put into her cigarette lighter, which I was down there because we went out and looked at the stars and see we could see some stuff when I was down there. She shone this thing towards it, and she said she heard a rustling. And both women said they heard a rustling off to the side of the highway in the grass. She shined the light over, and all she could see, and it's the only thing she can remember, is sort of a outline of a figure. Sort of she could get the shoulder part, and it was sort of behind a little low bush. And an endless rustling. She figured that, you know, maybe there was something near, maybe some kind of a being of some sort. Well, the girls ended up, you know, flipping, and they ended up trying to get back in the car, and they said it was like going through quicksand. It was everything sort of slowed right down. And I should add, that highway, that road, is pretty busy. Even after just around midnight, it's still pretty busy. It's a major highway. So, you know, that's what they couldn't figure out later on. Why would they don't remember any cars coming or going, you know, past them in any way? But they got in the car eventually, turned the car. It was really slow at starting. They said, you know, as you turned it over, lights would go off and on, that kind of thing. So they heard the stories before. They got the car going, turned around, and headed back to Kelowna, where they came from, with this green light following behind them, but above.
Wow.
They ended up hiding out in like a little orchard thing just to try to hide, and, you know, all of a sudden they sort of thought, hey, maybe we lost it. So anyways, I guess they didn't, because this thing was sitting just up above them when they looked out the windscreen again, and they could see this orange, this green ball. So they scooted home, and, you know, basically that was it for the night's event until the next morning. Karina had got up early. She was sitting at the table. She felt really sore. You know, but she, so of course, being, you know, anybody, if you're sore, well, why am I sore? So she did check her body. She had a bruise on the bottom of her foot. She had a bruising on her thigh area and up on her waist. She had a bruising on her left breast. Her friend got up, and Karina, of course, looked at her, and her friend said to her, says, gosh, I feel sick. And, of course, Karina says, wow, you look absolutely terrible. All of a sudden, blood starts gushing out of her nostril. Karina grabbed a towel, one of the tea towels that was on, you know, hanging onto the fridge door, grabbed it, and to help her, you know, to catch the blood. They whipped her into the bathroom to get her cleaned up. So anyway, she says, well, I'll, you know, her friend says, well, I'll just, you know, I'll just get a shower and maybe that'll make me feel better. She took her nightgown off. When she removed her nightgown, Karina gave out a kind of a scream, or basically, you know, frantic guy, oh, what's good? What's this? And here there's a great big burn on her tailbone, you know. It was just bizarre. So the lady after that sort of went, she went back to Abbotsford because she had been up visiting Corrine in Kelowna. When she went back to the doctor, or back to Abbotsford where she lives, she went to the doctor and asked, you know, check this out. And the doctor, which I can cannot confirm this, but the doctor did say, according to what they're telling me, it looked like a radiation burn. Anyway, so that was sort of it on that for a little bit until, you know, as the days rolled along, the women started becoming sick, really ill, where weight loss, hair loss, every medical thing you can possibly think of, they were going through. I mean, they were extremely sick. Karina ended up in a hospital for a week because I was calling her in the hospital to see how she was doing. And even continuing after that, I mean, there has been objects in her head through the scans. You could see them. When they scan again, it's not there. They don't know. They do not. The doctors, through all these tests, and she's been going through batteries of them since that time, they cannot come up with an explanation for her illness, and she's still ill to this day. So
Anything like hypnosis or anything to see if they could recall anything that happened?
Well, we tried that. I think it was sort of up to her. She ended up going to a counselor, actually, and to try to deal with it, because it really did stress her out a lot. There's no question about that. You know, and I think she was a little nervous maybe to find out what was going on.
Right.
I mean, she was already sort of stressed at the point, I'll tell people right straight up, you know, if they have some kind of an incident like this, I'll say, well, you know, there is an option of being regressed and maybe try to get, you know, recall some of the events, have a doctor, a proper certified person to recall the events if possible. And I think at the point, I think she's just a little bit frightened. She's probably more open to it now. I'm really sure she would be. But she lives on, you know, a pension, very small pension. So, you know, I have to try to find someone, you know, if I'm going to find someone, I'm going to have to see if they can do it free gratis, which I got a fellow, really good enough certified, hypnotherapist on Vancouver Island, but you got to get over there. You know, it's cost a lot of money. So the story just went, it just went on and on, and it's still going on to this day. So not only that,
her
kids. Yes, with her. Yeah, and her kids are involved. They're going through the same stuff. You know, the weird thing, her daughter was, you know, they were both in her home one night, and her daughter in her room, and she was, I think, 15 at the time, and Karina's in hers. They're all sleeping. All of a sudden, she comes, her daughter, I guess, Karina, and I don't know if they got some kind of connection there, maybe through this whole experience of abduction and whatnot. They ended up, anyways, having this connection. They both got up basically the same time. And her daughter could hardly walk, and she says, well, you know, what's the matter, dear, to her daughter? And she says, well, I had this really terrible dream that, you know, I was taken with, in a van, and these men had me, and I don't know what was going on, but I wanted to get free, and I jumped from the van, and I hurt my knee or her leg. Well, anyway, when she had woken up, you know, of course, when Queen and her mom or the daughter met in sort of in a little passageway of the home, was really in pain. She was limping. She actually just about fell out of bed when she tried to, you know, get up and stand on her leg. She almost fell down. Well, they meant she was sort of hobbled down. Well, they took her to the emergency because what happened? You were fine just before you went to bed, and all her colluded cartilage now was ripped in her leg. How did that happen just from her laying in bed? You know, I don't know. So, you know, and her son also. Her son has a real problem. He lives down on in the Lower Mainland. You know, it's about a four-hour drive to Kelowna. Loves his mother very much, you know, and vice versa there. But he has a heck of a time wanting to come up and visit Mom, because when he comes and visit Mom in Kelowna, things happen to him. Particularly one night, he ended up, you know, coming up for a stay and with Mom. And, you know, he went to bed at night. Anyways, next morning he gets up, and he just got his, it's hot. It's a really warm area there, let me tell you. Anyway, he gets up, and he was going to go get a shower, and I guess Karina was, you know, talked to him when she was already up. And as he walked by, and he sort of, his back ended up to her, she gave up sort of a yell again kind of thing, and says, "Oh, my God, you know, what's this?" And here there are such a perfectly triangular shape with these dots all on his back. It's big. It's not small. And anyways, they couldn't figure out what was going on. Outside, they noticed later on that during the day that outside they have like a lot of these green trees, a lot of fruit growing down the area. So they have all these nice, beautiful fruit trees, and they're all healthy and green, and they were prior to that. But the one directly right outside his bedroom window was burnt. Weird. I mean, everything was, it was just weird. Like somebody not burnt it up, but everything had sort of dried on it. It was dying. It was dead. And that was happened overnight. It was totally bizarre, you know. So anytime he doesn't want to go up. So another instance there, he woke up in the morning and he was, you know, complaining of, you know, pain in his back. His mom went in and she says he had a hole in his back. You could take my, I'm 6'1". I got big hands. You could take my pinky finger and you can stick this in the hole in his back and go right down to his spine.
I know.
I know when people probably listen to this, they probably think, man, this guy is quackers or he's fallen for a real silly story. Well, I have photographs and all this stuff on all these, the burn, the hole in the back, you know, I mean, healed up, the scars there. I spent a lot of time with this lady. Like I said, I've visited her. I have a visitor twice. I went down doing, I was speaking to her down there, so I ended up going and visiting her there. We shot a documentary on her. I mean, I've seen the medical records. I mean, my gosh, there's something going on there, and I can't tell you what. But other than that, it's bizarre. Matter of fact, she went on the Montel Williams show. She wrote in, and she thought, well, maybe, I was a little bit freaked out, but anyway, she did it. She went on a Montel Williams show, and she had when Sylvia Brown was going to be on. She's
right.
A psychic, I'm sure
the
you
psychic.
Know. Right. And so, anyways, they had her in the audience in New York there, and her son. And they sort of did a little pre-thing up, so where they have a cameraman up here, and they sort of, you know, visit Karina's home and just give a basic rundown of the story. And then they go to Karina in there, and then Karina will ask, you know, ask Miss Brown, you know, well, could you tell me what happened? Well, she said to Karina, she says, well, you definitely had a UFO encounter. Were you abducted? No. You know, she went on with a bunch of stuff that I'm sitting here, and I couldn't believe what she was saying. I said, there's something wrong here. She said they were just talking to him at the side of the road. Well, that doesn't even make sense to me. Let's put it this way. I was so mad, I sat down and wrote up a big article. Holy moly, they get a lot of emails over that. They're all good, though. But, you know, it's just one thing after another for those women, and especially Karina, because I do keep in contact with her, and it's such a shame, because she's a really nice person, and, she's going through, I'll tell you, couldn't go through any worse.
I think they need someone that, someone that does these regressions to reach out to them and give them some help if they can't afford it on their own, because this sounds like it's really serious. Brian, let me ask you a question. Have you found out anything about what all of this could be? Why are these lights, UFOs, whatever they are, what they're doing, what they're up to, what's going on? Have you found out anything, or anyone else that has been experiencing this? Have they discovered anything else about that?
Well, you know, I guess I could come up with some theories and thoughts and so forth. I'm not too good and willing to do, I think, because I'm trying to look for the facts, and I think like yourself and probably so many other ufologists, you know, they're looking for the answer, you know.
Right.
If we're going to get that, hopefully one day we will. But for now, I honestly don't know. Is it something or someone from elsewhere? Is it something the government may be doing? I really don't know what's in turn. And I'm just that I add to that story about these two women in Kelowna. You know, we get their stories, you know, a person can sit back and say, well, my God, you know, that's something else. Or, you know, they got to be making this up. All we got is two people, you know, telling their story. But something else is very important. Matter of fact, they had 45 minutes to an hour missing time, by the way, on the highway. So that sort of probably pulls into the abduction area on that. Also, what I didn't mention, which is very, very important, when the women were on the highway, of course, no one knew they were there unless somebody drove by and seen them. They wouldn't have known by name or anything, but they might have seen their vehicle and them standing outside at some point. But because there was so much activity and I was getting so many reports, it turned out so awesome. I mean, just awesome as a ufologist end of the things. Ended up being 9 people. I mean, 9. Now, I don't know what happened to the 9. I know I have physically spoken to 8, and I think I probably goofed up somewhere on the 9th. But the 9 people who were dotted around that area, because it's like farms and ranches and homes and so forth, you know, around that area, did not see the women, did not know the women were there, anything to do with it, but reported a green glowing ball of light hovering roughly over the highway that night.
Wow.
The women were there. So that adds more credibility to their story. You know what I mean, eh?
Right, exactly.
It's just a fascinating story to read the whole text report. And actually, there's updates and everything else. And as a matter of fact, there's audios people can listen to for free anyway, so on that. And, of course, there's photos and so forth. But, I mean, you know, that's just one my gosh, you know, so many cases, like Bloomington, Indiana. My gosh, here's John Tosti. I don't know if you ever heard the name or read the story or not, Juliana.
No, I never heard of him.
Oh, this is talk about wild. He's been going through a lot of stuff through his around his property, anyways.
In Canada too, Brian?
No, he's in Bloomington, Indiana.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, my gosh. Awesome. Well, awesome on my end, not good for them. That's, you know, I never, when people think I say it's an awesome case, so like I say, for a ufologist end of things, it is a good case, but really, it's not a good thing for these people because they're going through it. So I don't want to make that clear. I don't mean it's a good thing. It's not. I'll tell you this one. This was crazy. On this particular night, he was going to go out hunting in the back part of the property. So it's a ways down to the property, you know, where he wanted to go hunting. It's quite a big chunk of property, and it's good hunting. So he leaves the house and goes down, sort of walks around the field, and then comes into the bush area. Well, he walked out the door, and here there was some light circling the big figure eight above the trees, just off from the house a little bit. He thought, wow, that's a little weird. I don't think I want to go hunting, early in the morning. It's still dark, eh? So he just says, well, Jim's coming. This is a friend of his the next morning. So he figured, well, I'll just wait for him. It really didn't sort of unnerve him, eh, because he went in and told his wife time now. And he says, I'm not going out there. It's too weird. So anyways, next day comes along. Jim pulls up early in the morning, gets out and comes up, knocks on the door, and John comes out. You know, they're going to go hunting for deer hunting down at the end of the property. And he says, you all set? Yep, ready to go. And Jim says, well, hey, what's the deal with the lights over these trees? He says, you know, I don't know. I've seen them the next morning. But he says, at least I feel a little bit safer, if you want to use the term. Now I got someone with me. So anyways, they ended up grabbing their rifles and so forth, and they got out there, all their gear on, and headed down the end of the field and into the edge of the trees. Now, just as they sort of come in, they come up on just a little knoll, and then there's a ravine, and then it's sort of more bush and trees and so forth. Well, they came up on this sort of little bit of a knoll, and then something caught their eye. And they said it was quite large. It was like this big orange globe sitting back into the trees, you know, over the creek and back in the trees a bit. And they thought, you know, the first, you know, instinct is, well, is it maybe the moon or, you know, the sun or something? Well, it was pitch black out and no moon. Anyway, so they all of a sudden they're watching us, and they were kind of a little bit wondering what that was, and getting a little, I guess, nervy, and or unnerved. And anyways, they didn't want to go down there. They were thinking of heading back. All of a sudden, this light went out. So that's fine. They got some big trees around them. And anyways, all of a sudden they see these little white lights and moving around where this ball was. So, yeah, I mean, John's all of a sudden, he's thinking, well, maybe these are other hunters, you know. Let's not make too much noise just in case we get shot at. So they ended up sort of ducking down behind one of the big trees and said, stay quiet, and just stayed there. And every once in a while, John would sort of poke his head out around behind the tree, and he could see these things moving, and they were coming in their direction. And so anyways, he popped back, you know, back and forth. And now they're getting really nervous because they thought, gee, we don't want to be shot at. So Jim ended up laying right down flat on the ground. John squatted down as much as he could, but he kept his eye sort of, you know, around the tree. And then they're getting close. And eventually they came around, and he said it was just like a light shining in their face. And he said these beans of some sort. He says it was really weird. He said, like, you know, like they might have had fireman hats on. But that's the last thing to remember. Now you got to remember, too, that, you know, this is super early in the morning. I think it was around 4th or in the morning, something. It was still pitch black. And later on, I think it was around 11 or noon, all of a sudden, hey, where am I? You know, daylight, sunshine, the whole ball of wax. And where's Jim? When he sort of got his wits together, where's Jim? Couldn't see Jim with him. Jim was with him. He ended up, you know, eventually hearing some moaning and whatnot on the other side of this ravine. And they had both together. Anyway, Jim sort of gets up. He's groggy the whole bit. And, you know, they're wondering what's going on. Looking for their rifles. They couldn't find their rifles. Eventually they did. They were piled underneath a lump of tree or a leaves. Somebody had piled some leaves over top of them. Anyways, they headed back. It's both bizarre. Anyways, they headed back to the house, went into the barn, got off all their gear. They said they didn't talk much about it at all. You know, really, you know, when you have something like that, but they didn't discuss it. It was really, I guess, kind of bothering both of them. Jim mm-hmm. took off. John went in. Well, to try to make a long story short for you here, for time-wise, John ended up he got so stressed out because something went on. I mean, maybe it was on his mind, but, you know, he was going through a lot. Anyway, he lost his job. He ended up going to see the doctor a number of times. The doctor ended up walking him from one part of the building to another part of the building, which is more like the hospital. They went up in the elevator. They got out the elevator door, and here, you know, with this doctor, they walked, or stepped off the elevator onto the floor, and here was two guys and met him. She walked back into the elevator. Two guys pretty much carted John off and were putting him in the nut house. John eventually made a call back to his wife and tell him, because he's trying to explain what's going on, you know, what's going on with him. So anyways, right. He got his wife come down, brought up a bunch of footage that's been going on. Eventually they released him, but I've got all the documents that he was in there, all pictures galore, footage galore, some very interesting things. Actually, at one point where there's like a red rod, he's taking footage of some object ahead of him, and this red rod kind of thing sort of comes in really quickly. You really got to watch. Comes in quickly and hits him in the arm. I mean, it's just bizarre. It's totally bizarre. But he went through. Yeah, and he did go through. He's seen a doctor, I believe, in Ohio, and he was regressed, which he wrote up the text, typed up the text report for the doctor. There's two parts to it. And he sent me, actually, the first regression session he had with that doctor. And it explains what's going on. I got that posted somewhere on my site. Anyways, what went on and so forth. And just at the end of the first part of this regression, he was being dragged into this craft through this hole. I mean, it was bizarre. So, I mean, you know, that's just a few of the many, many cases. I got a lot of military stuff, Cannon Air Force Base. Oh, my goodness, a lot of stuff happening down there. Going back a lot of years, back in '76 when, hey, military, hey, there's nothing flying around us. Hey, they're aircraft. I always laugh,
Brian,
at that with Juliana.
You know, Brian, I always wonder, it seems like it's like about everything in life, you know, there's good and there's bad. Some people have these incredibly, like, benign or awesome experiences. Other people have these experiences where it's really scary and things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the cattle mutilations and all that. I read about this stuff a lot, and this really fascinates me, and sometimes I wonder, could it be like these UFOs, they're different races that are coming here, some that are really, really mean, and some that are coming here because they're coming to help us, or what do you think about this, with all of your experience?
Well, I don't know, but it brings up a good question, because I did, when I did one of these, I went on this little tour down here and did a bunch of UFO talks, and I talked about just exactly what we're talking about now, and
right.
I was asked, you know, how do you feel about these beings? And I said, oh, well, I don't know. I personally don't know, and I don't want to tell somebody something if I don't know. I mean, I'm just giving
exactly.
them a bunch of garbage, you know, as far as I'm concerned,
uh-huh.
out of my mouth. So I said I can tell you from personally what I receive from folks who are good enough to send their reports in and so forth on this topic, that 98% or more is bad. And then I ended
wow.
up after this talk. Yeah, so after I gave this one talk in Salmon Arm, after, you know, and you have sort of a tea and coffee and people get to, you know, talk to you and stuff, and I get to talk to the folks, which is really nice. And I had some ladies come up to me, and they weren't too happy with me. And the reason why they were unhappy, because they said, well, you said it's all bad. And I says, no, I says, what I said is, from what I receive, and I do receive quite a bit of this stuff, I said,
mm-hmm.
from what I receive personally, there's about, you know, 98% that is bad experience. And the way I sort of try to lay it out for them is, and the other couple percent is good, you know, so I don't want to say it's all bad. I get people
right.
saying it's good, too.
Right.
But I try to explain to people, if somebody came into your house, and we're not talking aliens or anything else, if somebody broke into your house, took you out, you know, basically out of your home against your will, did whatever they do, you know, that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. As far as I'm concerned, and I got stronger words for that, but I mean, it's a bad thing. So basically, in my mind, if somebody's going through an experience such as, you know, abductions and so forth, well, they're getting taken without their will. I mean, some of them, hey, maybe real passive, maybe they're put under some kind of thing where they don't know really what's going on until maybe later on, all these marks and that, and maybe some of the memories come flooding back and through dreams or whatever, or they get regressed and they find out what's happening. That's my
right.
way of looking at it. It's not good, you know, to
exactly.
an extent.
Exactly. If they're going to come and take you out of your home, at least give you the choice of saying, I'll go, or no, I don't want to go. And if you say, no, I don't want to go with you, have the respect to honor that person's wishes, you know. That's like kidnapping, or at least that's what we call it on planet Earth, I think.
Exactly. You're completely right. And that's the way I look at it. And I'm not trying to, you know, jam my ideas down anybody's, you know, throat who's listening or whatnot.
Right.
But that's just the way I feel. But I do get a very, very, very small percentage, you know, of people believe that they're here to do good. And I respect that. I do honestly
right.
respect their views on it. I just haven't
seen...
Yeah,
well, we have to look at both sides, you know?
Oh, most definitely. Oh, I agree. I agree.
Figure this out. You have to look
yep.
at both sides.
That's right. If I knew for sure, which I don't, like I explained, you know, then I could say, nope, they're here bad. They're just here to do us no good at all. But I don't know. You know, it's like
right.
Everybody in this UFO field. You know, nobody really knows. They really don't know. I mean, we get the experiences told to us. But you know, let's put it this way. I guess the people who know are the ones who are going through the experiences.
They don't even know because they don't come
no.
back with enough memory to explain the whole
True.
Big picture. So,
oh, I know. Oh,
right.
Exactly. It's a terrible thing, you know. But you know, on that end of it, like abductions, what a topic to work on. You get nowhere, absolutely nowhere. I mean, you know, gosh, even that time with the two women here had their, you know, all that was going on. I know in Vernon for fact, and I know this for fact, although it's not the proving of this stuff, but all of a sudden he got a cadet military base there. It's an, actually an abandoned Canadian military base. So the cadets sort of use it to, and it's big. It takes a lot of land. And they use it for, you know, training and so forth a little bit here and there. Well, that thing was flowing with military. They had helicopters, trucks, and everything else you can come out. They had armored personnel carriers. They had small tank-type vehicles. I don't know the names of them offhand. But anyway, they were all loaded in. Brass was seen coming in and out, flying helicopters, these guys in and out. So there was something going on. And what? So what did they know? Yeah, and they're not telling me, and they're not telling anybody else, that's for sure.
Right.
You know, so it's really, really frustrating, this topic. You know, people, I think, don't realize that sometimes. When you get a report and you say, there's a light in a big, bright light in the sky, and I've seen it for a couple hours, and it's just sitting there, you know, but I'm watching it move from the west to the east, well, it's a good chance it's maybe Venus or one of the planets or a star or something like that. You know, I mean, you know, it's easy. You can bring out some of the astronomy programs. You get the report, you ask some more questions, and you can figure that stuff out. But when it gets to this weird stuff, oh, no matter how much time you put in.
Strange days.
I know. Exactly. So, you know, you just try it. You just keep going and hopefully you get a break somewhere, you know.
Eventually you'll get to the bottom. Eventually you'll put the pieces of the puzzle together because if you just keep, I don't know, but some of these people that you're talking about with these experiences that they're telling you they had, I've seen quite a few things in my day, too, and especially that first one you were talking about with the ladies on the street at night thinking that
right.
It was moon coming down out of the clouds.
Right.
That sounds real familiar. We'll get together and talk about these sometime. And I personally have seen many things, but never had any kind of bad experience. That's why it leads me to believe that what's going on is either the bad guys are not from here, or there are different races visiting here, good and bad, just like we have here, just like anywhere. You know, there's good and bad everywhere, good and bad in everything.
You're
those
completely
that are
going to
harm you and
right.
Those that are going to help you.
Yep, you're 100% right. Yeah, you really
yeah.
are. And let me tell you, I really want to hear your story. I can't wait for that because it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's like I say, Brian, this is a strange, strange world, and it's so strange that you just can't sit down and wonder anymore. You got to try and find out what's going on because these incidents that people have with these experiences, it makes you think you're going crazy. It makes it you feel like you're losing your mind when you don't have anybody to talk to, or when you do talk to somebody about it. And
that's
the,
right.
You know, it you just got to talk about it. You just got to find out what's happening. So,
oh, I get hundreds of emails. I like just like that, honestly, and just saying, I'm so glad I found you. And there is other ufologists too, just not me. I'm so glad because at least I can open up and somebody doesn't think I'm a nut, and at least they'll listen and try to help where they can. And they said, even if you can't do a lot or solve the case, at least it's a relief for me for a short period of time to get it off her chest.
Exactly. Well, Brian, dear, this has been really, really interesting and really the most informative show I've had. But we're almost out of time. And I want to thank you so much for all this incredible information that you shared with us. And if somebody has an experience, Brian, how do they contact you? How can they contact you? And any other information, Brian, that you have, like if you have any books to sell or a website or anything that you want to share, any important information, if there's something that you want to get out there, you can just go right ahead right now, Brian, and let everybody know.
Okay, well, that's pretty simple, straightforward here. They can find me, contact me, so any information you would like to relate to me. And one thing I'd like to stress, it is personal. I keep everything between the witness and I, unless they tell me otherwise. But they can get me through my website at www.hbccufo.org or brianvite.com. Anyone? Nope, got not much for sale. Just got my CDs. There's, about 200 and, my gosh, I don't know, 20 now actual interviews on 4 CDs. So it's building really fast. But no, other than that, I enjoy hearing from people, and if they want to write to me, just please know that things are very kept confidential. I do have a very strict privacy policy here.
Okay. Well, thanks, Brian. Thank you, my dear. And if anyone out there didn't get the chance to write down Brian's website and information, or what you can do is just go to my show information page. I'll keep his information up for a couple more days so you can get the information on him. And if there's anyone out there that has had these experiences, please reach out to Brian. Brian is a very nice gentleman. You can trust him. He's honest. He's not going to expose you. He's not going to tell anyone anything that you tell him if you don't want him to. But it's a lot better when you go through these experiences and you're afraid and you feel lost and alone to have somebody to reach out to and even just talk about it. So my heart is with you. I would say give it a try. Give Brian a call. He's very gentle. He's a very good man and very compassionate and understanding. And he'll handle you with kid gloves. He's not going to expose you if you don't want to be exposed in any way, write you up or put you on the radio or anything. It'll be totally private and confidential just between you and him. In the meantime, dear souls, just hang in there. You know, there's good, there's bad, there's negative, and there's positive. And just maybe your experience that you experienced and you're feeling scared about right now and calling it a bad experience, who knows? Maybe another 5 years from now you might turn around and call this the greatest experience of your life, because maybe what it's leading up to, the good that it's leading up to, you really don't see it and understand it now. So don't be afraid, and you're not alone. Hang in there. You got a friend. Give Brian a call if you need some help. And we've come to the closing time of another great show, so I'd like to say thank you so very much, Brian, for being my special guest tonight and for all that incredible information, Brian. And
been a pleasure.
Just keep up the great work, my brother. You're doing a wonderful job, Brian, and not only are you doing great investigations, but you're helping so many people that really need someone. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You're an angel. Thanks a lot. Thanks for being on my show. I'll be in touch with you. You can, I think you're going on vacation soon, so give me a call when you get back. We'll get together and we'll talk some more, and thanks again. And Don, BBS staff, thank you as always for all that you do to help us get this information out to the world. Bless you all, dear hearts. Christopher, thank you. Thanks for all your help. Thanks for hanging in there with me. And listeners, thank you so very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Always remember, dear souls, be kind and compassionate and respectful to each other and all of God's creations, and strive for peace. Be peace. Teach others by your positive examples. I wish you health. I wish you love. I wish you peace and abundance and good night and sweet dreams. Just thank you, Brian. Bless you, dear heart. Bless you.
You're welcome. Good night.
Good night.